You're listening to the North Peace Roundtable podcast, your weekly podcast where we discuss theology and the Christian life. Well, Corlin, happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday.
It is 3 o'clock in the afternoon. This is not when we usually record podcasts.
Which is like 7 a.m. And honestly, I'm still half asleep. Usually, it's like first half hour of those podcasts, I'm just sitting there like waking up still.
Yeah, so some of you might be wondering, like, okay, it's Corlin and Andrew, and it's a Wednesday. We've decided to actually add an element to the podcast called Off the Record, where, but it's very much on the record.
It is. We're going to record all of it. It will be uncut. But it's like...
When we said it, I laughed, because it was like, you know when you tell someone, can I just say something off the record? It means, like, we're not going to talk about this. So this segment is actually just going to be off the record, but it's on the record.
It's like off the record of like the podcast, the normal like regular episodes that we would put out. But it still is the Roundtable podcast. It's just...
Yeah. So we were talking about, you know, sometimes it's hard to come up with topics to record every week. Or sometimes it's like, I mean, we all have families. We all have... I was going to say we all have jobs.
And well, we do.
But like Corlin and I work at the church. But Cameron has another job with the city, and sometimes it's like...
Essentially, life is hard to line up.
Yeah. So we, today, we're kind of talking about, hey, Corlin and I both work at the church, and we could record these more kind of like off-the-cuff conversations during work hours, and Cameron doesn't necessarily need to be here for this. It's not the regular episode. It's just kind of like a bonus footage stuff.
Pretty much. It's like the bonus features on your DVDs, if you remember those.
So basically, we haven't planned anything. We don't have a set topic. I wrote down four ideas.
I wrote down four, too. We're matching.
Oh, man. So, for those of you who maybe are like new, my name's Andrew. I'm the lead pastor here at the church, and Corlin's here with me.
Hello.
And he is our pastoral apprentice. It's been like, what, 2.5 months?
Yeah, just about.
Almost done his probation.
I can almost slack off. I'm kidding.
Come in and you said, what did you, you said something about like, am I off my probation now or?
No, I can't. It was something about that topic. It was like, I can't do anything. Oh, it was with my schooling that I'm doing. You were like, oh yeah, no, I've been bad because we're doing a course together right now just to enjoy the Bible together. And you had missed the course, like the last few classes. And you were like, yeah, you're way better at this. And I was like, yeah, that's because I'm still on probation. And joking, though, I will continue to be good at that even when I'm off of probation.
So for the listener, I just had to get up and get a Kleenex, one because I'm growing
a beard. Do they want to hear this?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
I'm growing a beard, and I haven't mastered the how do you drink a beverage without getting it all in your mustache.
Is this one of your things on the list?
No, it wasn't. Okay. Anyways.
I was going to say, that's going to be
so
hard.
So if any listeners have tips for like, here's how you... drink a beverage without getting it all. Like last night we had pulled pork sandwiches for dinner, and my wife looked over and was just like, you're a mess, man. So what we want to do is, we don't just want to be rambling about stuff, but specifically just in our lives and ministries, maybe different topics related to a theological conversation that we had, or like something that came up in our family life that relates to the podcast.
And we wanted to discuss it in a way that might bring opposing ideas. Because if you listen to the podcast regularly, you'll find that like Cameron, Andrew, and I, most of the time, come with very, very similar ideas on the topic. And so we kind of like spearhead it, and it takes us, you know, 30 to 40 minutes to discuss a topic, and then we move on, but we all come from the same point of view.
Yeah.
We're hoping that going through life and some of these things, although Andrew and I have very similar theological views and doctrinal views, that we might find some differences and actually have to like discuss and work through things in a different way than what we would with the podcast. So we're hoping this is going to be like, in some ways, an open discussion around these topics instead of just like, well, what does the Bible say about this? That kind of question will come up. And I wouldn't say that we're going to end up on like entirely different ends of the spectrum on those views. But hopefully it encourages a conversation around it instead of like a presentation, like what we have been able to do with the podcast. So just kind of like a different formula for the same.
It's totally organic, man.
Yeah.
So what do you got, Corlin? How's your week been? What did you write down? Any if things happen that you want to bring up?
You know what's funny? Topics? I knew you were going to ask this. We didn't plan it, but I just knew. I was sitting in my office kind of prepping the couple of things that I wanted to talk about. And I was like, you know, I had a youth ask me this same question just the other night. And I realized, like, over the course of the last few years, I've really realized that we are so good at just giving, like, the really genuine, like, how's your week going? Good. And you kind of, like, nod your head.
It's going really good.
But, like, you don't really want to say anything. Sometimes you just kind of draw blank. But to actually answer your question, my week has been really good. I feel like this last few days especially, I have learned so much again. And that's not... I realize how like cheesy or corny that might sound. Like, oh, he's in a pastoral apprentice role and he's learned so much, right? Like, I feel like it could be just fluff.
Telling the people what they want to hear.
Right? But I mean that. It's with some of the courses that we're taking or that you and I are taking, the seminary level courses, they're, the way the information has been presented in those, it has challenged my view, not in a like, it's deconstructing my faith, but it's challenged my view on the Bible and like, oh, I've never thought of it that way. So just the views around creation and stuff like that. So that has been on my mind a lot this week. What about you? How's your week been?
Oh, that's it. I thought you were going to like...
Well, not yet.
It's good. So here's my first point. I hate coming up with Advent sermon ideas.
You're willing to put that on the record?
Oh, totally. Wow. Yeah. So... yeah, everyone just thinks I'm like super holy and downloading
now
things from God.
It comes Christmas time. They're going to just sit yeah. and watch you. You'll be like, Christmas is awesome. They'll be like, he actually doesn't like it.
I've said this to a few people. Christmas is my favorite time of year. Like if you drove by our house on November 2nd, all our Christmas lights are up. Our house is lit up. Like my goal is to be like the Griswold. And if you that's Family Vacation or Christmas Vacation movie. When he like lit, he's like the most lit up. You've never seen National Lampoon's.
No, but is it at all like the house?
Oh, no,
in
we'll
Fort St.
never
John?
Be able to do that.
No, but it's his house from the movie.
Oh yeah, it's okay. Yeah, if you've been up to like what is it called, Candy Cane Lane or whatever that house up on the hill. My goal is to be that, to be the house that's like the most lit up on the block. So I love Christmas. I'm very like into this season. I love all the sentimentality mm-hmm. and all that kind of jazz. But it's funny because on the flip side of that, in ministry-wise, it is my least favorite time of year planning like an Advent.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, you don't know what Advent is the four Sundays leading up to Christmas Eve, essentially. And usually you do Christmassy type messages and you light the Advent candle. And yeah. I like all of that. Like, you know, each candle, hope, faith, peace, love. And then you usually preach on the Christmas story or like from the Gospels, that kind yeah. of stuff, right? But I'll tell you, so being here, this would be our seventh Christmas here. So my seventh time, like before I wasn't a lead pastor, so I had no, I didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
And like seriously, like all week, I have such a hard time coming up with, I don't know, like maybe other people, like do you, are you someone who's like, yep, like so going to church during Christmas, are you yeah. someone who's like, yep, there's the wise men story, yep, the shepherds, yep, yeah, I know Herod was mad, yep, or is it always like, yeah.
I'd say kind of a healthy dose of both. Like, it's like rewatching a movie that I've seen multiple times. For those of you who don't know me, I absolutely love rewatching movies. So like, I'm okay with it, but I know what's coming, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think because of the way my life has been over the last 5-ish years, I've come to like a new appreciation for the Christmas story.
Yep.
'Cause like growing up, I mean, I grew up in a Christian home. So it was just like the, oh yeah, there it is. Yeah, I know the three wise men came, you know. They were all perfect. They brought their gifts and like not recognizing that they were sinners. Essentially, it was just like, yeah, they were just wise men, right? So I knew the like Sunday school answers to the questions and saw the Sunday school timing of things. But after coming back to Christ, I really like the last few Advent seasons have been really good like just good reminders of who God is and what he's done. So I would say recently I have an experience of like, okay. Oh yeah, here's that. It's been like a really exciting time again. Right.
And it might be because I'm not a super creative type of person. I just, if someone was like, yeah, you need to preach through this book of the Bible. Okay, deal. I can do that. Like that's easy.
But we don't even see Advent per se in the Bible though. So like, where does that concept come from?
It's like a church history. I don't know exactly when, but it was, it was kind of like this church tradition where, you know, leading up to Christmas Eve and the celebration of Jesus's birth, you have these four Sundays where you specifically focus on. I have no idea when that started. Yeah. So it's not in the Bible. But I get it's good. Yeah. Like Advent means like preparing yourself.
Yeah.
And so it's good. But yeah, I guess for me, I always struggle with like the, didn't I just say this like last year? Like, yeah, we know the shepherds, they're shady, but they were the ones at the, so anyways, that's just me being raw, real, and relevant, about me struggling, through the Advent series.
I feel like I can understand the struggle with the creative process for something like that. Cause I feel like we live in a generation or in an age or whatever wording you want to use where everyone's always expecting something new for one, but like that newness is like a bigger and better than last year. It's not necessarily new material. It's just a bigger and better. So when we live in a consumeristic world like that, as a pastor to come up with material that in some ways appeals to that, but doesn't just try to appeal to that, right? Yeah. Like you want to be faithful to the gospel and to the story of Jesus's birth. And I would say that to an extent, well, not just to an extent, it just doesn't need to be added to because it's already amazing, right?
Yep.
Like I think we look for those extraordinary details and it's not that they're necessarily bad. Like those little like, when I first started coming to the MB, there was somebody who would like, there was like wind chimes on his drum set and he would like tingle the wind chimes. And it was like, whoa, that's a like really cool thing. Cause like it was a cool element, but completely unnecessary in the sense that like, well, you don't need that to tell the story of Jesus. So I could definitely see just from a, even building sermons perspective of like, how do you prepare your church to once again be reminded of Jesus? While still using the same Bible that we've been using for years. Cause there is like, it's a beautiful story. So I totally get that.
Yeah. And and God's faithful and he gives ideas every year and it's going to be fine. But yeah, I just knew like, cause Corlin's actually preaching this Sunday. And then it was like, oh yeah, it's going to be November 28th. That's the first week of Advent. And kind of like, right, what are we going to do for Christmas this year? So
it's interesting that you have that listed because one of my things that I wanted to talk about was just sermon prep because I am new to this position and new to pastoral ministry. I've not preached that many times, so I don't just prep my sermons in a week like you do. I take much longer to do that. For those of you who do not know, that's about a 4-week process for me instead of just a like week by week thing. And it's interesting cause even though I have that time, it stretches my own gifts and I have the wording written down just as like some written down cues. It stretches my legs to like, I don't know how to do those things. And I think it's interesting that God often calls us to things like that. Not saying that we're necessarily inadequate, but that we have to rely on him. And isn't it amazing that we can even rely on him? Because like you've discussed at least with me a few times where like you'll come and some weeks you have no idea what you're talking about till a little bit later in the week. And then suddenly God just kind of reveals what he wants his message to be that week.
Yep.
And it's not like God is literally physically speaking through you, but he is literally speaking through you through his word, right?
Right.
I don't know. It is interesting to me that he does that. Cause even for me, in my experience, again, not many people would know this, but I really struggle to write sermons in general. I don't think it's one of my gifts is preaching. I love teaching about God, but for some reason that line between teaching and preaching is a really hard one for me to cross. But yet God has been faithful to produce sermons, and I like, there are times where I just don't know how to describe it other than that it does just feel like God just kind of lays it out in front, and you're like, oh, okay, there you go. Which is funny because that's not at all where I would have gone with it or what I would have written. So even with the Advent series, like you said, it just comes sometimes, which is really cool.
Yep.
Spirit led, right?
Spirit. Always. Yeah, man. Okay, what else do you have written down? Anything?
Yeah. So we are expecting, Aaron and I are expecting, woo-hoo! Not Andrew and I, Aaron and I.
Yeah, big announcement for the podcast.
Aaron and I, my wife and I, are expecting a child. Which means, and it's our first child, which means that we're starting a family.
January 8th.
Yeah, that's your due date. Yeah. So we'll see what we're doing on that date, but I don't know if it'll be being in the hospital or if it'll be waiting or if we'll already have the child. Who knows?
Oh, man.
But with that, I have been thinking so much just around, there's a book, I believe the title of the book is Habits of Grace.
Okay, never heard of it.
I can't remember who it's by, but essentially it's this concept of like spiritual disciplines.
Yeah.
So stuff like, to just put it really simply, stuff like praying, doing your devotionals, making sure you're reading your Bible, spending time with God, with your family, and discipling people.
Yeah.
Concepts like that. And I've just realized it's interesting because I started getting better at those things when I came back to God, obviously, right? Because I knew they were important. And then we got married, Aaron and I got married, and it was like, yes, I'm going to be like perfect husband and we're going to do all these things together. And then I found out it's really hard, at least for me, to like have that consistency to say, okay, every day in between this time, we're going to sit down and read the Bible together. Yeah. Or this time we're going to sit down and pray. And it feels kind of embarrassing to admit that, but like, it's tough for me to like line those things up. So then now with a child coming, it's like, right. Like I want to disciple my child well, and I want to model that well, not as like I don't know how to put it. Not as like a corny, like imitate me, but like, hey, like, your mom and I actually believe what we say.
Yep.
We actually want to live out what we are saying. We're not just saying follow God and then going and doing other, right? We want to actually follow God. So just even thinking what that looks like modeled realistically, to not just like,
oh man,
be like a monk who just sits with his Bible instead, like, no child, like turn away from me that I might learn of God, right? But like, at the same time, to have time where you're quiet with God, where your child sees that, like trying to figure out what that looks like, and then putting aside distractions and I would say addictions, like to technology, where it's easy entertainment instead of actually sitting down and reading. I was listening to Jefferson Bethke. That's a name you might know, Jefferson and Melissa Bethke. And he was talking about how like our generation hates silence. So like, if you've ever been to a small group and someone asks a question, and there's like that
quiet
2 seconds of quiet, and everyone instantly, you like feel your gut just twist. He would say that that's like proof that you need more silence in your life, right? Because we always have noise. And some of that noise is just even looking at a screen all the time. Yep. It's that easy access. So I've actually been really challenged all of that to say, like, I want to learn and actually implement and learn how to keep it going, have the longevity of this, to have those habits of grace, of doing my devotions, showing my child that I actually love God, not just with my words, but that like my actions would show that, and that it wouldn't just be acts of righteousness in the sense of like what the Pharisees would do, where they were just trying to make themselves look righteous, but that it would actually be like out of a heartfelt desire to follow God and to learn who he is. And I have to admit, there's a lot of like try harder about that, but I haven't really ever, I don't think I've ever really sat down and just thought about what that would look like and how to implement that. Cause there's been times where I've set down my phone and been like, okay, no more phone for tonight. Works great for that night.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
2 nights later, it's like scrolling Facebook for however many hours. Yeah. Right. So yeah, that's been something on my mind. How, like, have you found that a difficult thing to?
Yeah. If I'm honest, we've really struggled with that too. Like, we've got 3 kids, an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 2.5-year-old. And it's to get into like a a rhythm of doing it regularly, like set times of it. Yeah. We've found that really hard because you can quote 8 million different excuses, yeah. but life is busy and we're tired. And so, early on we had times, yes, when we would pray together and mm-hmm. read the Bible and, you know, it was really great. And then, kids come and, with your first kid, I'm still tired, but I was going to say with your first kid, but there's sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
And again, I'm saying that realizing that you could say, that's just an excuse. I get that.
Yeah.
But you're just tired and then you work and this and that and the other thing. So we've gone through like seasons of doing really good. And we're reading, you know, the Bible with them and praying together and all that kind of stuff. And then there are seasons when I think like, oh gosh, it's been like a week.
Yeah.
And we haven't read the Bible together as a family.
Yeah.
We pray together every day. We do that. But if I'm honest, there's times when it's like, oh man, you feel like a failure going, man, we haven't read together as a family. And then you'll do it because you like,
yeah,
you know, but then there's times, and if this is me being really honest, there's times when I know I'm like, tonight we should, but it's like,
I'm tired.
I just don't really want to.
Yeah.
And that's bad.
Yeah.
So I think we're still trying to figure out what works really well, like to sit down with our 8-year-old and our 6-year-old to read together would work really well. And our 2.5-year-old would just like destroy the house because he has no interest in that. He's a boy and like full of energy.
Yeah.
So trying to think of creative ways, you know, maybe it's our girls share a room and maybe right before bed I read with them or something, right?
Yeah.
For me, to not make it, like you want it to be a habit, but to not make it law. Because then I think it loses.
Yep.
And again, I'm not saying like, oh, only do it if you like feel like it. No, of course not. But if it becomes just like even in my own personal quiet time, there's days when I miss because I have Tuesday we had an early morning meeting. Mm-hmm. Usually I get up early and read my Bible in the morning, and I just didn't that day because it was just like life is busy today.
Yeah.
And I don't think I felt like I'm a terrible sinner. It was just like, I missed it. I'll tell you that. It was like, I can't wait till tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
So it's learning, I think, how to like, to just be realistic, right? To set realistic goals. Because I know people that are like, they feel convicted about something. Okay, I'm going to read the Bible every night with my kids for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you just get so maybe like setting a realistic goal of like, you know, we're going to read for 10 minutes together or something, right? Because I so often do that. I set some outlandish goal and then I get so mad that I can't keep it. I'm like, well, that was just such a ridiculously hard goal to keep.
Yeah.
So, and then too, like my wife would tell you, like one of the advantages is that I go to work and I have a quiet office and sometimes I can spend a little bit of time on my personal, right? I can just pray and my kids aren't screaming in my face.
Yeah.
I remember Molly, she'll tell you like early on, there was just some days when it was like, I literally haven't even been able to go to the bathroom by myself.
Yeah.
I don't think I can pray for 15 minutes in this nice quiet.
Yeah.
So she would just pray on the go.
Yep.
It's not ideal, but it's like, it is what it is.
But I don't think it's wrong either, right? Like I, that is another thing that I would say that we often, I think, misconceptualize in the sense of like our time with God has to be like quiet with your little lamp and your coffee and your Bible and your notebook. And like, you have to journal for 3 hours and like have an emotional breakdown because of how God is just so good. And it's like, those things are good and we should be emotionally moved by how God moves. But at the same time, like you said, some days, what if our quiet time with God was just as we're doing things to just constantly pray and think of who God is? Because I'm not saying that, that's the only thing you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't see God as someone who would be, or as someone, that's the wrong phraseology. I don't see God being upset with someone who spends time in prayer when they don't literally don't necessarily have the time to physically pick up a Bible and read 30 chapters, right? Like, that doesn't make sense to me with how we see the Bible written, with how we see those stories.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate what you say of, like, how do we balance devotion with, like, heartfelt devotion, right? Mm-hmm. Making sure that it's not just an act, right?
Yep.
Not just an action that we do, but that we also understand that it's not always going to be this crazy, I said, emotional outpouring because of what you're reading. So,
and I think too, there's a great book called Souls in Transition. And it was, it's probably like a decade old at least now, but it was like this first time it was like a Canadian study of kids and young adults and teens and like continuing on in the faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it said like one of the best things that, how did they word it? Like, to give your kid the best chance, again, like, mm-hmm. yeah, God is sovereign and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
But to give your kid the best chance to like continue in the faith, it was them seeing that it actually was like real to you.
Yeah.
So like families that went on missions trip together, people who saw their parents actually actively engaged in church, not mm-hmm. just we show up, families like doing stuff spiritually together, like that, they said, was the most impactful in a kid's life. That they saw, like, oh yeah. And I remember being a youth pastor, and teens would say that to me, like, why would I follow Jesus? My mom and dad don't even take it that seriously.
Yeah.
Right. And they would go to church and they would faithfully and da, da, da. But at home, it was just kind of like, they don't even really.
You just live your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, again, this is like, if you feel the weight of that, like, oh man, it feels like a lot of pressure, but to just go, okay, if I actually love Jesus, like I will be doing some of these things. Right. And really imperfectly. Yeah. No.
It kind of works.
But I think it's amazing when your kids see you, like, even in the struggles, and to be honest with them, to say, like, kids, and I've done that once or twice, I think.
And at a level that's appropriate for their age,
when
too.
I realized that we hadn't been reading the Bible, I think there's been once or twice when I, like, told the kids, like, guys, we've really dropped the ball, and you know, this is really important, and we got to do it. And I think that even shows, like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and to, as a husband, then have that. Maybe this isn't the right term, but like the spiritual leadership there to like recognize that and then mm-hmm. act on it. Cause I know, like, and please hear me when I say, like, I don't discredit my wife for saying this at all. I remember once honestly asking, Aaron, is there anything that I can improve on as a husband? This was pretty early on.
Oh boy.
And she was like quiet and very gently. And like, neither of us were mad. Neither of us, like, it really wasn't a butting of heads, but she was like, I think you could work on your spiritual leadership.
Hmm.
Man, did that cut me to my core though. Cause it was like, and not in like I was destroyed, but it was like, she's right. You meant,
like, take the garbage out faster.
No, but I so appreciate that. Cause even though I still struggle with that, it's something that often I think about. And so then my challenge for myself is to not just think about those things, but to actually do them, right? As corny as it might feel to come home from work and say, honey, let's just spend like 5 minutes in prayer together.
Yeah, totally.
Right? As corny as that might feel at first, it's so frustrating because I know that that will eventually become like I said, like a habit of grace where it's something that you do, and there's going mm-hmm. to be amazing times and there's going to be hard times to do that. But like, we already have the habit of, when I come home, we both and go sit down on like our double couch and just sit there for a bit. So like, how hard would it be to do that? Right. Those things just take a little bit of time to implement the pattern. I don't know what better term to use than habit. Like it's something that you just do.
Yeah.
So, Aaron, if you're listening to this, keep me accountable too. Like,
enjoy that silence, because now when I come home, I open the door and it's like,
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Actually, my son Oliver is in this new habit of, like, when I come in, he'll go, daddy's home. I missed you. And I'm like, oh, buddy, that warms my heart. Yeah. And then, yeah, that's about as cute as he gets.
That's awesome.
No, it's cool. Okay, I have something written down. The end times.
Ooh, that's quite a change of gears.
So the reason it came to my mind is that you like showed me this website. Yeah. Like people are very obsessed with COVID being the end times.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
And then we watched, I think, the first like 4 minutes of David Jeremiah. Is the coronavirus a sign of in Revelation or whatever?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just like, it's not the first time I've heard that, but like, it just had me thinking about like how, I don't know, people are so obsessed with figuring out how it's all going to end. And I don't know, with COVID stuff going on, have you thought of that? Like, is this near the end? Is Jesus coming back soon? And or have you not even gone there?
I think right at first, like when not like when it was still over in China and there wasn't like reported cases over on like the North American part of the world, right when it started like actually becoming a thing where we're at here in BC, where it was like, oh, there's cases, oh, it's building. I think right at first, and with all the like the craziness of that time, I think part of me was like, oh boy,
here we go, like, buckle up,
like something's happening. I don't know that I would have gone like, oh man, the end times are near. And but like, I think there was this sense of like, oh boy, like something's up. But I wouldn't say that I went all end times. And I think the reason that I didn't is mostly because, to me, although I believe the end times are going to happen, obviously, right? In the sense of like Jesus will return.
Yep.
I don't, to me, that is a victorious day. It's not something to be concerned about,
yep,
if that makes sense. So I my personal view on that is that if your view of who Jesus is correct, the false hood that will come, or if you think that falsehood comes or anything like that, won't deceive you because you'll know Jesus, right?
Yeah.
That's my view on it. And let alone the fact that Jesus returning is like I said, it's a victorious day. It's not something to dread. It's not something to, oh no, happening. It's like, yes, like bring it on.
So you want to hold like a super spreader event to like speed up the end times?
No, not at all.
You heard it here, folks.
Nuh-uh. You heard it from Andrew here. I didn't ever go to it.
Yeah.
I'm relatively confident that I can assume that you did not turn to end times with that either.
No, I mean, no. Actually, like, not even in the slightest. Because it's my view, my eschatology, my view of the end is not the typical North American evangelical view, like, and I think, yeah, and I won't go into all of that, but like we taught through the Book of Revelation on Wednesday nights, and yeah, my view is of yours, like, okay, Jesus is gonna come back, he's already won, my job is just it doesn't, like, coronavirus, flood, famine, earthquake, like it doesn't change what our job is. It's just preach the gospel and be faithful till the end. But I know that like lots of people were like, is the vaccine the mark of the beast and blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, when Trump was president, it was so many American Christians were convinced that he was connected to, you know, he's King Darius in the Book of Isaiah and blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. And then like when he moved the embassy to Jerusalem, someone literally told me that's seal number 2 in the Book of Revelation. Oh, only 5 more seals and blah, blah. And I'm just kind of like, that I don't read the Book of Revelation that way. So it doesn't really terribly bother me that much.
So why do you, like, this is a legitimate question. This isn't like trying to like change people's opinions if you're listening with that opinion. I'm just genuinely curious. Why do you think people turn to that? Because like you and I, like we said early on, we have a similar view on that.
Yep.
But why do you think that's something that people grasp onto? Because like, I know that there is going to be differing views on certain topics like that until the end of time. As long as your view of the gospel is correct, I don't know, like, I wouldn't say that it's a salvation issue.
Nope.
But why do you think that's something that people so closely cling to when anything happens? Because I, like, personally, I don't understand that, and I haven't put much thought into, like, why someone would think that, but do you have any?
Yep, I think a lot of times, and this is more years ago, it was used as, like, fear to...
Oh, you mean, like, back in Sunday school where they'd be like, you don't want to end up burning in hell, do you?
Or, like, or even, like, you don't want to miss the rapture, do you?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Like, the fear, I remember hearing that... I don't have, like, specific examples, but that kind of idea of, like, the view of the end times was, like, to keep you in line. Like, you never know when Jesus is going to get back. And the rapture, right, which I don't even think the rapture is biblical. I don't think there is a rapture. But that was used as, like, if Jesus comes back and, like, the rapture happens, if you're...
Are you ready?
If you're sinning, you're going to get left behind, like...
Hmm.
So I think one, it was used as a way to, like, have people afraid.
Hmm.
And I've talked to a few people who grew up like that, and they're like, that's exactly, I was terrified of the rapture. Like, I was not looking forward to it at all. And then I think the other thing, is that people want to know how it all ends. Like, 'cause then maybe we have a bit of control. And then if I read the book of Revelation chronologically, and I think that I can, like, decipher the code, then when world events happen, I think people like being in control. Yeah. So then it's like, okay, so Trump did this, so that means that. Okay, so we're at seal 2 out of 7. And then after that, it's the trumpets and then the bowls. Hmm. So I think there's a level of, like, we want to be in control. And the fact that, like, Jesus says, I think it's in Matthew 24 or 25, like, no one knows the day or the hour, not even the Son of Man.
Yeah,
only the Father knows. I think that bothers us to, like, a certain extent.
Yeah,
like, I want to know. So then we look at, like, okay, COVID, that's like a plague, and then there's these plagues, and then we try and come up with, like, ridiculous, like, oh, Gog and Magog in the book of Revelation, that's Russia, right? And then the scorpion things are black helicopters, and we try, and it's like, buddy, like, I don't think that's what it's about at all.
I would genuinely, like, I don't know, this is literally me spitballing, so again, if this is you listening, please don't take offense, because this is just me, like verbally processing and trying to, like, figure things out.
Yeah.
But I'd be really curious to know if those people that love that type of, like, almost detective work, playing Bible detective, would like escape rooms. Because, like, it is, like, you piece together those things, right?
A left behind
escape room.
Escape room.
Ooh.
And then you have actors who, like, get raptured. And then, anyways.
I genuinely don't mean any offense by that. No. I just mean, like, those... I don't think trying to figure stuff out is bad. I just personally really don't see any value in trying to, like, decode Revelation in that way. Because, I mean, John didn't even write that to our church today.
Nope.
Right? So, like, it... If you're looking at it from a biblical author point of view and from the readers, the original readers of this letter, I can't see them being like, oh, he means like 2,000, 3,000 years in the future, right? Like, it doesn't, in my way of thinking of scripture and understanding of scripture, it just doesn't make sense to see it that way, right?
Yeah, he wrote it in like 90 AD to literally those seven churches listed.
Yeah.
All being persecuted by Nero and that empire.
Yeah.
And all of that imagery, you can connect historically to, like, Nero. And yet, it's also for all time.
Yeah.
So I think the book of Revelation is like, here's how you be a disciple of Jesus until he returns. In every generation, in every part of the world, anytime persecution happens, this is how you make it through.
And, like, I would even argue that it shows... in a sense, what it'll look like when Christ returns. Because even like in Revelation, I think it's 21 or 22, where John talks about, like, the river of living water flowing out. But, like, it gives a picture of the rest of creation alongside that, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yep. Yep.
And so I don't think that people are entirely wrong to say, hey, this is what it could look like, right? But it's apocalyptic literature in the sense of, like, it was a vision given to John. It wasn't like, it's not like God laid out a chronological order of happenings.
Nope.
The book of Revelation is thematic, not prescriptive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So yeah, no, it's really interesting how we.
So yeah, I just laughed when we watched a few of those clips. And so if you're listening, the COVID-19 vaccination, whatever you think of it, it is not the mark of the beast, and you can't accidentally take the mark of the beast. And if anyone would say like, no, it is, we'll just point out to them that like in Revelation 13, it says, yeah, you take a mark on your forehead or your wrist.
No, Christians are marked on their forehead, aren't they?
And then yeah, I think it's on your wrist. Well, that's what I was getting to. Yeah. Oh, okay. Like Revelation 13, it talks about, yeah, you can't buy or sell or unless you take the mark. And people are going, oh, see,
if I don't can't have go
the,
to Boston Pizza.
I can't go to Boston Pizza if I don't have the vaccination. And it says it causes all small and great, rich, poor, or free slave to be marked on the right hand or the forehead so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark. That is the name of the beast or the number of its name. And so people have said, like, see? But it's funny to me because like the very next chapter, it says, then I looked and there was the Lamb and with him 144,000 who had his name and his father's name written on their foreheads. And then earlier on in chapter 7, it talks about people sealed on the hand or on the forehead. And so no, we don't think that Christians literally, it's not a literal physical mark.
Yeah.
It's spiritual. It's the Holy Spirit.
That makes me curious. Like, is it in Revelation where it talks about Jesus descending with like a mark on his thigh? Mm-hmm. I've heard that like interpreted as like he is literally tattooed, so it's okay to get tattoos. Yeah, I don't personally think that that's what it means, but I'm like, I've never actually looked into it, so I'm curious what.
Yeah, it does say on his robe and on his thigh, he has a name written: King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So tattoos are.
That's what I've heard that as a taken out of context type deal.
I've heard that too. I don't think that that's.
So do you think do you think it is a literal marking though, or do you think that it's similar to like the mark that?
Yeah, I
or just don't know.
I just don't know. I think a lot in Revelation is very symbolic. I would say the majority of Revelation is very symbolic. Mm. So it could be a literal tattoo, or it's just. I'd have to re-dig into like what's the significance of the thigh.
Yeah.
Right? Because a lot of times in culture, they would put their hand under the person's thigh when they made like agreements with them.
Oh, okay. But,
so I don't know if there's some like...
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Like if you read, I believe it's... is it in the story of Abraham somewhere? He makes some kind of agreement and yeah, he puts like his hand under the guy's thigh, which I'm like,
that's wild.
That's a weird way to make. Yeah. We don't do that anymore. Yeah. Like,
at least not here. Like,
yeah, when I went and signed my mortgage,
I didn't come on at the church and like have to put my thigh under every elder's.
Oh, leg. We should have had like a ceremony.
It's like foot washing ceremonies.
Oh gosh, is that next on your list?
No, no, no.
Oh man,
you know what is next on my list though, which is really weird. So we're talking about like. Essentially end time views and like how different Christians have, you know what literally is the next thing on my list? Opposing or new views as a Christian. Like if you were to essentially, that's how I have it written. But my idea behind it is like the amount of times that I've been in conversation with other Christians. And as soon as you would bring up a new view, and by new view, I just mean one that is new to that person.
Sure.
Especially in Christian circles, it's like, get out your crucifixes and stuff and like you're demon possessed. Like not quite, but it's like that backing away. Like, no, that couldn't possibly be true. Cause that's not what I've thought for 20 years. Right. So it's interesting. Cause like end time views are very opposed within Christian circles. So the reason I have that written down is just, like I said, there's so many conversations that I've had recently where it's been presented as like, If I wasn't willing to have an open mind to what the original writers and readers of the Bible would have thought, I would have been like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
That's not what it's like in 2021. but I find it really interesting as Christians when we bring up something that might be different than what someone else believes. Mm-hmm. Because like you and I are going through that course with where we're reading through Genesis, and the author of that course does a really good job of presenting first off that like, hey, come and take a look at this. Like,
yeah,
like essentially he does a good job of literally presenting the information.
Yeah.
And it was, in a sense, it's not like cramming it down your throat, or feeling pressured to believe it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. Have you ever had like interesting experiences bringing up maybe new to that person theological matters or doctrinal? Am I saying that right? Doctrinal issues?
Doctrinal?
Issues of doctrine?
Yeah. Doctrinal. I'm sure I do. Man, I gotta think. Yeah, it's learning how to, like, it's okay to disagree on, like, secondary issues and not to be, like, blasphemy.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, unless so, it is actually
unless
blasphemy.
Unless it is, yeah. So, like, on secondary issues, like, oh, man, I can't think of a specific example.
What about the example of that Adam and Eve were literally the first and only humans on Earth and populated the Earth versus the view where Adam and Eve were two of the first humans on Earth, but that there was other humans on Earth at the same time.
Burn him at the stake.
Which one?
I'm going to leave that. I've never like had that conversation with someone, but it's interesting. Yeah, for me, like when I hear ideas presented that are different, I always weigh like, okay, does this affect the gospel in any way?
Mm.
Does this affect salvation in any way? So the only question, I remember when you brought that to me, like, oh yeah, have you heard the, like, so my kind of historic view would be like, yeah, God created Adam and Eve and all of humanity comes from
their
those
lineage.
Two people.
Yeah.
And for me, one of the reasons I think that's important is because it talks about, you know, sin entered the world through one man, mm-hmm. and therefore all sin. So I'm going, well, if there was other people who didn't sin and don't come from Adam's line, could you get to like an iffy place where you're like, oh, there's some of us who aren't born sinful.
Mm.
That's my only thing.
Yeah.
But I kind of go, I've never heard that. Let me investigate it and go, yeah, let's look into it. Cause that's an interesting idea. Like I remember one teen came to me and he was a newer Christian and we were kind of discipling him. And then he said, we met at Starbucks in Maple Ridge and he said, I think I believe in evolution, like macro evolution.
Yeah. Like, so like large scale.
We came from monkeys.
Yeah.
And he said, I still believe in God. I just think God kind of like kickstarted everything.
So maybe use that as the method.
And just kind of hands off and I'm going to allow over billions of years humans. So I was like, okay, but let's dig in and ask some questions then. Like, so when it says like God created man and woman in his image, when would that have happened?
Yeah.
Then? And he was kind of like, and you could tell that he hadn't actually like thought of that.
Yeah.
I was like, so if he just kind of like, if we're all just animals, then when, like the Bible seems to make it really clear that human beings are more important than animals.
Yeah.
So when did that, I asked him, when did that happen when God made us in his image? And he kind of thought and was like, well, it happened when we like transitioned from apes to humans. That's when we were made in God's image. And I was like, okay, like fair enough. But do you see like how that's a problem? So
yeah,
when I hear new ideas, I'm always just kind of like, okay, does it affect salvation?
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. I would probably say that I'm like a young earth creationist.
Yeah.
But I know really smart people who are like, no, you know, it's called the gap theory, that there's this gap between Genesis verses 1 and 2 and verse 3, where it says that the earth was empty and void and the Spirit of God was hovering.
Yeah.
And then God says, let there be light. And they say, what if there was billions of years between
those days?
And I said, yeah, I'm fine with that. I don't think that affects any aspect of my salvation.
Yeah.
And so a Christian who's like, I believe in an old earth. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But cool. I don't think you're a heretic. Like,
yeah.
So I think there's stuff like that where you can kind of like agree to disagree.
Yeah.
And just be, okay, that's fine.
Yeah. I think that's something that is really important to know how to do, but also to, like you said, critically think about things that are brought up, right?
Not just say, this is new to me, so it must be wrong.
Yeah, I was never taught that, so
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
I think there's an interesting balance of standing firm on what you know and what you believe to be true.
Yep.
But yet being willing to look at an opposing viewpoint.
Yep.
Right? I think that a lot of fear comes from that, though, because what if I go down that road, right? And then we would think, what if we go down that quote-unquote slippery slope?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I know for myself anyways, in my experience with youth ministry so far and with even working at a homeless shelter for a while, it's really interesting when you present ideas as factual and someone else presents their ideas as factual and you allow room for a consideration. And I don't mean that to say, like, if they're like, no, God isn't real, that you'd be like, oh, yeah, maybe they're right.
Because
we know that to be factual, right? But to in a sense, entertain what they're saying.
Sure.
For the sake of conversation, right? Because I've watched countless videos of people, quote unquote, doing Christian apologetics where someone will say something different than what they're trying to relay. And they just like verbally abuse that person into like, no, that's not it. And like, you can just see the other person just shut down and it turns less into a discussion and a presentation of belief into an argument, into like legitimate anger.
Yeah.
And as anyone who is at all well educated in how to communicate, anger is not a good form of communication, or it's not good to communicate angry.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So I like I said, to entertain that, even just in the sense of like asking questions to try and help that person even question their view, if you don't believe it. Right.
Yeah.
To like you said to that youth, well then where would this come into play? Right. I think that's far more valuable than just straight up shutting down. That's not to say, though, that there isn't times where a person does just have to stand firm on scripture and on what you believe to say, no, this is the case.
Yeah.
Because I think there is value in that, too. I think we just have to be gracious in how we do that.
Yeah, totally. I think we've been talking for like an hour.
It has been a long time.
But that's good. Yeah, I think we could probably leave it at that, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'd say so.
So, yeah, hopefully you've enjoyed this. This kind of like free flowing format.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll keep doing this every week.
Hopefully it encourages you to have conversations similar with your friends and family.
Yeah, totally.
Showing that conversation is not something to be scared of, but that you can engage in and enjoy.
Totally. Yeah. So we'll keep doing the regular episodes on Thursdays. But Corlin and I will probably keep recording these off the records and, if you like them, let us know. Give us some feedback. This is what's difficult. So we record this every week, and like I have
this really is off the record. Eh?
I have this is just between you and me, the listener. There's no one else. can I talk just to you listening?
All right, it's getting a bit weird. Just say what you're gonna say.
But if you could do us a favor, and I know we say this jokingly, but like we have no idea how many people are listening. We have no idea if you actually...
If people even are listening.
If you are listening.
There's a few that we know of, to be fair.
So if you listen in iTunes or Spotify or I think Google Podcasts.
YouTube, I think, still or no?
No, because it's not video.
Okay, not YouTube.
iTunes, if you search North Peace Roundtable Podcast. Spotify, if you search the same. Google Podcasts. But if you can actually like it... And or not like it, you rate it, right? 1 out of 5 stars or whatever. Yeah, obviously, rate us 5 stars. But if you leave us like a review.
Or even reach out to us if you know how to reach out to us.
Or yeah, if you actually listen and enjoy the podcast, let us know so that we're not like
babbling and just talking into thin air.
Exactly. And it would be curious to see how many people actually enjoy and listen to this. Because we need a boost to our egos. Just kidding. So, this has been off the record, but on the record. And stay tuned for tomorrow's episode as well. Okay, bye.